Well, for the past 3 weeks, through the series called Scarlet Thread, we have explored different stories about survivors. All of them were hanging by a thread. Their lives were on the brink of death. And through these stories, we witness how people respond when everything is truly on the line. And talking about survivor, does anyone remember what happened around 3 months ago on June the 12th? Anyone remember? Anyone have a good memory? 3 months ago, June the 12th, 2025, an Air India passenger plane crashed shortly after takeoff near the airport. Originally, there were 242 people on board, if you remember that story, right? And eventually, 241 fatalities were reported. You do the math. There was one person. In the midst of that disaster, there was one survivor, who had been seated in the seat called 11A, if you remember the news. This is one of the stories, the Daily Telegram. Many people were asking this guy why, out of everyone on the plane, that one person alone managed to survive. And if surviving a plane crash that took 241 lives seems miraculous or even ridiculous, then prepare to be amazed, because the person in the Old Testament that we are studying tonight, survived a disaster that claimed the life, not just a few hundreds, but a million people. Our story can be traced back around 12 months after Israelites left Egypt. I'm sure we all heard about the story about Passover, about Exodus, right? So it was around 12 months after they left Egypt and while they were in the wilderness, in the desert. In the book of Numbers, we will be focusing on a few chapters in the book of Numbers. Chapter 11, verse 4, it says, "Now the rebel that was among them had a strong craving, and the people of Israel also wept again and said, 'Oh, that we had meat to eat.'" Verse 5, we remember those people were out of Egypt, right? But and as they look back, as they remember the fish we ate in Egypt that cost nothing. The cucumbers, the melon, the leeks, the onions, the garlic. I don't know whether you like all those ingredients. But now, our strength is dry up and there's nothing at all but this manna to look at. I'm sure you heard about that, right? So manna is the food they were eating every day. There's no other choices. And perhaps you have heard fake news. You have heard a lot about fake news in these years. But do you know that there are also fake memories? Fake memories. Fake memories are fictional in your mind, which are completely disconnected with the reality. They're just something you come up. And you may remember, a manna was supposed to be the God-given food for the Israelites in the wilderness. And for a long time, God's people were fed with manna. It was a daily miracle, basically. Right? They don't farm, they don't do anything, but the food just came down. And can you believe that at that moment, when they were doing all the complaints, at that moment, they were complaining about this miraculous food from God. They were complaining. Verse 10, Moses, the leader, heard the people weeping throughout the clans, everyone at the door of his tent, and the anger of the Lord blazed hotly, and Moses was displeased. God was angry because the people were ungrateful about his provision. You can imagine, right? God won't be happy about that. And when the people in slavery cry out to God, God rescued them, right? Way back when they were in Egypt, God rescued them, God liberated them from Egypt. But after living in the wilderness for almost a year now, all their memories seems to be reversed. We don't know why. The memory seems reversed. The God who rescued them, who's supposed to be good to them, now is a bad guy. And Egypt, supposed to be the land of slavery, right? They hate it. They want to leave, right? Let my people go, right? But Egypt seems to be the dream place. They want to go back. Everything is reversed. Something is wrong. Verse 33, the anger of the Lord was kindled against the people, and the Lord struck down the people with a very great plague. Therefore, the name of that place was called, let me try, Kibroth Hattaavah. Wow, it looks like a restaurant name to me. But this place, actually, because there, they buried the people who had the craving. Well, after this tragic incident, you might think that the Israelites had learned a lesson to obey God, right? Unfortunately, something even worse happened in Numbers chapter 13 and 14. Chapter 13, verse 1. The Lord spoke to Moses, send men to spy out the land of Canaan. That is where they are going to conquer, which I am giving to the people of Israel. From each tribe of their fathers, you shall send a man, each one a chief among them. The purpose of sending out the spies was actually is to prepare the people to conquer, to enter the land. Verse 17, Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan and said to them, go up to the Negev and go into the hill country and see what the land is. Well, they couldn't take pictures there, but I'm sure they can do all the memories, write it down, or, you know, keep the record. And whether the people who dwell in there are strong or weak, whether they are few or many, and whether the land that they dwell is good or bad. In other words, the mission of this spies were to bring a complete investigative report about the promised land. Eventually, the whole mission took them about 40 days. Verse 25, at the end of that 40 days, they returned from spying out the land, and they came to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation of the people of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back words to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Remember, right, in the wilderness, there's nothing except manna. But here is a different land. There is a lot of planting, so they bring back, grapes maybe, apples maybe. So everything is supposed to be different. Verse 27, and they told him, we came to the land to which you sent us. It flowed with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. Wow, that's not bad, right? Moses must be relieved when he received the word that the land was flowing with milk and honey. Unfortunately, too bad, there's a but here. There was more about the report. Verse 28. However, the people who dwell in the land, so after about milk and honey, there's more about the report, right? The people who dwell in the land are strong, and the cities are fortified and very large. And besides, we saw the descendant of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the Negev, the Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites, well, all those big names, dwell in the hill country, and also the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the Jordan. What does it mean? That means the land, even though it's flowed with milk and honey, it's supposed to be good, right? But there was also strong enemies throughout the land. But when Caleb, which is one of the spies, sensed that the people were having reservation and concern about taking the land, he voiced out Numbers chapter 13, verse 30. But Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and occupy it, for we are well able to overcome it. You can imagine that Caleb, this by, he knew what he is doing and he knew what he is saying, and he believed that they can do it. But on the other hand, then the men who had gone up with him, the other spy, said, no, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we are. So you can see a contrast here, Caleb versus the other spies. And instead of presenting an objective description about the land, the report from the spies is now stirring up emotion, negative emotion in the crowd. Verse 32, so they brought to the people of Israel a bad report of the land they had spied out, saying, the land through which we have gone to spy it out is the land that devour its inhabitants. I don't know
how he do it, but let's take this word, wow. And all the people that we saw in it are of great height. So they are tall people, they are giants, right? And there, we also saw the Nephilim, and we seem to be to ourselves like grasshopper, and so we seem to them. The Israelite spies described the people they saw in Canaan as Nephilim, as giants, compared to themselves as grasshopper. As the story developed from chapter 13 to 14, something happened which is beyond our imagination. Let's take a look at how the people react after all these report and update. Number chapter 14, verse 1. Then all the congregation raised a loud cry, and the people wept that night, and all the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. Besides grumbling, they were also playing the blaming game. Verse 2. The whole congregation said to them, "Would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would that we had died in the wilderness? Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword?" Seems like they almost forgot all the bad things happened in Egypt, right? So here they are complaining, they are blaming God. Besides grumbling and blaming, the people are also opposing. Verse 3, "Would it not be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And they said to one another, "Forget about this Moses or Aaron. No, they can't lead us. Let us choose a new leader and go back to Egypt." The people were abandoning the original plan. They are abandoning the original leaders. And instead of moving forward to the promised land that God has planned for them, they just want to go back to Egypt. That's pretty sad, right? Moses and Aaron was caught completely off guard, not knowing how to respond. Verse 5 is that Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the people of Israel. Then Caleb and Joshua, we probably heard about that, them, right? They spoke up in verse 6. They were among those who had spied out the land. So Caleb and Joshua, they tore the clothes and said to all the congregation of the people, "The land which we passed through to spy it out is an exceedingly good land." This is the reality. Verse 8, "And if the Lord delight in us, he will bring us into this land and give it to us. I'm sure we can do it. A land that flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord and do not fear the land, the people of the land, for they are bread for us." Caleb and Joshua, these two spies, they knew that. As long as they obey, as long as they follow God, the Lord will lead them into the promised land. And there's one more thing that Caleb pointed out, which was indeed the central focus of the whole Exodus journey. Verse 9, "Their protection, the enemies, is removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." Caleb knew the reality. While other people think that the giant was there, we are the grasshopper, but Caleb see the reality. Who said that we are the grasshopper? The people in Canaan are the giant. It should be the opposite, right? There's only one giant, which is the Lord. But unfortunately, Caleb's voice was not received. Verse 10, "Then all the congregation said to stone them with stone. The people's mind has been captured by fake memories and fake news, and fear filled their mind and eventually led them to stone Caleb and Joshua." Well, that was a dangerous moment, right? Verse 10, "But the glory of the Lord appears at the tent of the meeting to all the people of Israel. And the Lord said to Moses, 'How long will this people despise me? And how long will they not believe in me, in spite of all the signs that I have done among them?" In spite of all the signs that I have done among them. Let's stop for a moment at this particular verse. Have you ever counted how many miracles did God perform for that generation of Israelites? Let's do a little counting together, maybe a three-minute counting. Before the Exodus journey, there were 10 plagues, as we kind of heard maybe from Kapos, right? From water turned into blood in Exodus 7, all the way to the plague of darkness. I can't go through all of them, but you can see from 1 to 9, to the darkness. And finally, the number 10, the death of the firstborn in Exodus 11. When each of these plagues happened, the Israelites were the witness. So they knew, you know, God was with them, God was helping them, God was fighting against them. They knew that. How God used one miracle after another to deliver them out of Egypt. Okay, after this number 10, what happened? There are more miracles. Miracles, next one, yeah, 11 to 15. By a pillar of cloud by day and fire by night, God led them and protect them. At the Red Sea, he parted the waters so the people can walk through it. And at the Red Sea, Israelites also witnessed how the mightiest army on earth, which is the Egyptians, was totally destroyed. At Marah, another place, the bitter water became sweet, another miracle. In the wilderness, when they were hungry, God sent manna, as we just mentioned, to feed them. Not just one day, but for almost a year. It didn't stop here. 16 to 20, when they were out of water, God instructed Moses to strike a rock, and they got water. When the Israelites fought the Amalekites, victory came as Moses didn't fight at all. At that particular battle, he just lifted his hand, and then they won the battle. And then when they arrived at Mount Sinai, the Lord descended at the mountain, and Moses went up to meet the Lord. The people almost see the Lord, another miracle. And when the people turned away from God and make a golden calf, you've probably heard about all the stories, right? But by his mercy, God did not kill them all. Well, God could do that. God didn't kill them all, but continued to lead them into the promised land, another miracle. And when they set up the place of worship, the glory of the Lord filled the entire tabernacle, and the cloud remained above the tent. It's another sign and another miracle about God's presence. So you can see that 20, from 1 all the way to 20, from Egypt to the wilderness, the miracles that God performed among the Israelites were simply countless. That's why. That's why God asked Moses in verse 10, of chapter 14. How long will this people despise me? How long will they not believe in me in spite of all the signs? See, we have listed 20 already that I have done among them. When Moses heard that the Lord is going to strike the rebellious people, Moses came up and pleaded for them. Verse 17, and now, please, let the power of the Lord be great as you have promised, saying, the Lord is slow to anger. Moses tried to ask the Lord to help. He's slow to anger and abound in steadfast love, forgiving iniquity and transgression. Please pardon the iniquity of this people according to the greatness of your steadfast love, just as you have forgiven this people from Egypt until now. After all the pardoning, the Lord finally spoke. Verse 20. Then the Lord said, I have pardoned according to your word. But truly as I live, and as all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord, none of the men who have seen my glory and my signs that I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, and yet have put me to the test these 10 times and have not obeyed my voice, none of them shall see the land that I swore to give to their fathers, and none of those who despise me shall see it. Uh-oh. I think they are in trouble. So here is the formal verdict. An entire generation of Israelites over the age of 20 would not see the promised land, even though they were numerous, you know, among that crowd, that generation, and you know how many? Assuming there are more than half the population was over the age 20 at the time. So to do the math for you, a total of 1 million would die right in the wilderness, and they couldn't go into the promised land. And only after the last one of this 1 million had died would God lead the next generation, which is under 20 at the time, into the promised land. It was truly horrific. It's crazy, right? And so, how did this revolt eventually settle? Verse 36. And the man whom Moses sent to spy out the land, who returned and made all the congregation grumble against him by bringing up the bad report about the land. The man who brought up a bad report of the land died by plague before the Lord. Of those men who went to spy out the land, only two people, Joshua and Caleb, remain alive. This is one of the most horrifying stories in the Old Testament. Well, we spent almost 21 minutes telling you the story. Besides knowing this story in your mind, what can we learn from this story, from the story of Caleb and Joshua? Let's go back. Numbers chapter 14, verse 24. But my servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land into which he went, and his descendants shall possess it. Have you ever wondered what is the different spirit possessed by Caleb? As only two survive out of 1 million, right? I think this is a crucial question. So what is this different spirit? Let's check out the same verse, but in the different translation, in the NIV translation. But because my servant Caleb has a different spirit and follow me wholeheartedly, I will bring him into the land he went to, and his descendants will inherit it. Caleb has a different spirit and follow God wholeheartedly. This phrase is crucial. He followed God wholeheartedly, with no reservation. And the opposite of wholeheartedly, I would say, it would be a divided heart, maybe an undecided mind. And what would it be like? A divided heart and undecided mind, always asking God questions, always questioning God. For example, God, do you really love me? Are you truly trustworthy? Are you really dependable? If God is good, why are we leading to this tragic situation? If God is with us, why have we fallen into this moment, this bad moment? Let's be honest. If you just take it, you know, this example, you can ask, was the logic of the Israelites justifiable? Actually, it is. They are logical, right? Every time they encounter difficulty, they will kind of reassess the situation, and they will kind of reevaluate whether God is really with them at that situation, every time. But if you have studied the modern history, you might have heard about this quote. It's not from the Bible, but I find it is quite relevant. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. So what's the problem of the Israelites? The problem is they only rely on the logic, supposed to be logic, and they ignore history. They ignore their story. They ignore what God has been doing among them. If they only look at one single moment, it may be true that conquering Canaan seems to be impossible. But if they look back and recount each of the 20 miracles from God, the picture should be very different. The problem of the Israelites is that they only focus on that present moment. They didn't care about what the Lord has done in the past. They didn't care about what the Lord has done in each of the 20 miracles at all. They focus on their own logic, but ignore the miracles that they have experienced firsthand. It's firsthand too, right? They are not just news they heard about from other people. They experienced each of the 20 miracles. So instead of following God wholeheartedly, they wavered between opinions. Whenever there's a new challenge came, they would go back to that evaluation mode. Is God really here with us? Can God be trusted? Should we go back to Egypt? And that's why God asked them, chapter 14, 11, how long will these people despise me, and how long will they not believe in me in spite of all the signs that I have done among them? Compared to the rest, Caleb has a different spirit. So what is this spirit? When you look back to all the incredible things that God has done in your life, if you just try to connect the dots, you will see it very clearly. The same God who made history for Israel could never fail against the Canaanites. He could never fail to conquer Jericho. Could never fail to take possession of the land. Caleb, God gave him a different perspective. He does not look at just that present moment, but the bigger picture, from Egypt all the way to the wilderness. Caleb, he could testify that God is real, and he has been with the people along all the way. And this is why, when he had the courage to say, let's take the land, let's take the land today. At the end of Caleb's story, let me share with you two reminders that you can take home. After all God has done in your life, it's not about the Bible now, but let's think about your life. Will you still hold back, or will you follow Him fully? After all God has done in your life, will you still hold back or follow Him fully? Are you still holding back? Just look at what the Lord has done in our life, in your life, in the past maybe 10 years, maybe 15, and some of us, 20 years. And this is the proof to convince you. Remember how the Lord has been leading you a long way, especially those difficult moments. How many times have you experienced His provision, His protection, His mercy and grace? As I look back at my family stories, I won't go into detail. 11 years ago, God helped us to relocate, to move from Toronto all the way to Vancouver. After living in Toronto for 30 years, as I look back, I couldn't imagine the Lord will uproot our family and then move us here. At that moment, I remember, it seems like every door in Toronto was closed, but there was one door which was open, which is Vancouver. And in just 6 months' time, God led our family with three kids. We took many steps of faith to move all the way from Toronto to Vancouver. I can't go into the details, but next time I will show you more pictures about that. It took us around 9 days to drive from Toronto to Richmond. Can you imagine? And for the past decade, as I look back, actually 11 years to be exact, we are truly thankful, and we are truly thankful we are traveling on a journey full of miracles. My wife and I has the privilege to witness how God has blessed the Koinonia community. From slightly over 200 people, it grows to almost 800 every week. This is really unforgettable. How about you? As you look back, have you seen God's hand in your life? When you encounter any tough situation, do you still question God's faithfulness? We have been singing God's faithfulness many times tonight, right? Are you still questioning whether God loves you again, again, and again? Second reminder, protect your memory. Protect your memory. It turns out that human memory is very fragile. Over time, some memories are forgotten, some grow faint, and some even become distorted sometime, right? Just like look at the Israelite. The longer the time passes and the older we get, the more blur our memories become. So it's crucial to protect our memory. And one of the easiest way, I don't want to go to anything high tech tonight, one of the easiest way to protect your memory is to buy a journal and a good pen, and then write down what God has done in your life. Well, if you're a little bit more high tech, you can use a camera, do a photo journal or something. As for Israelites, they were also using different ways to help them to protect the memory as well. When they have crossed the Red Sea, Moses wrote a song to commemorate God's salvation. When the Israelites conquered the Amalekites, Moses set up an altar with the name Jehovah Nissi, N-I-S-S-I, to remember how the Lord had fought for his people. When they experienced God's saving work, they will give a place a new name. They will rename a place. They will build an altar so that all of God's work in their life will not be forgotten, but will be recorded. So when they opened up the map, many locations, actually, they pass through, got a new name, a special name. And when they connect all the dots on the map, it became their story, God's story saving them, of saving them about salvation. And actually, we also need a map as well, a map to help us to remember what the Lord has done in our life. And perhaps we can call it a life map. This life map is a tool to help us to protect our memory. This can even become a tool for you to share your faith, your experience with people who don't know Jesus yet. So tonight, I would like to give you a moment later. Let's take a moment to look back in 2025. Can you think of three moments in the past 8 months, 9 months that the Lord has done special work in your life? To saving you, to protecting you, to helping you go through different difficulty, something you could never imagine. And if you are able, if you have journal on hand even right now, write it down so that you remember. And if you can't remember three things yet, it's okay. I'll invite you to say a word, a prayer to God. Ask Him to help you to experience Him in a deeper way in the rest of 2025. How about that? So let me give you a minute of silence. Let's reflect. What has God been working in your life in the past 9 months? Church, let's stand and let's pray together, shall we? Let's stand. Dear God, we declare that at this sanctuary, at this evening, we declare that you are the faithful God and you never make mistakes. Lord, forgive us that we have often forgot what you have done for us in our life. Lord, have mercy and forgive us that we often question about your love, about your faithfulness. So Lord, help us. Grant us the spirit of Caleb so that we can follow you wholeheartedly.